It is the Raleigh James Show, and while we were doing replays, we decided we would rewire the studio and thought we had checked everything. That's wrong. So I don't know where the intro went, but just pretend you heard do-do-do-ba-ah. There's a lot of people pretending a lot of things, like they actually know what happened on 9/11. We've had Dr. Judy Wood on a few times, and I think she is up there in the Guest Hall of Fame. She's one of my all-time faves. And, you know, a lot of people have been to her website, and it's drjudywood.com, have gotten a lot of information. In fact, so much information that in some ways it's almost information overload. Judy has written a book, and it is incredible. It will give you all the information. It is in a very easy to follow, logical, easy to read format with all the proof you will ever want to realize that what you think you saw is not what happened. In terms of exactly what did happen, to some degree that's still conjecture. But I got to tell you that I thought, having talked to Judy on a few occasions, that that I was very familiar with everything that she had uncovered. Au contraire. I should mention, by the way, we are live. It is the 21st of September, 2011, and we will take calls in the second and third hour. And that's something that when we replayed the interviews with Dr. Judy Wood over the last couple of weeks, a lot of people wrote saying, I got questions. Well, Judy has answers, and tonight in the second and third hour, you will be able to ask them because she will be here. Now, as I say, I thought that I knew, I won't say all, but that I was at least familiar with the big points in Judy's research. Then I got the book, and I got to chapter 3. Firstly, I want to welcome Dr. Judy Wood. How are you, Judy?
Hello, I'm great.
It's a masterful piece of work, and I'm so glad to have it. I've got a link on the homepage at Raleigh.net to Where Did the Towers Go, as well as to, of course, drjudywood.com. And thank you so much for writing this.
Thank you.
I gotta say, like I was just mentioning, I thought that I was real familiar with everything. And when I got to the jumpers, I was absolutely stunned. We have not talked about this before, and I think it's a great place to begin, because when we hear the numbers of the bodies or parts of bodies that were recovered, it about equals the number of people who allegedly jumped.
Yep.
Now, that's one thing. But as I look, and again, it's not just the research and your verbiage, it's the pictures. When I take a look at, we're talking at over 1,500 people who damn near flew out of this building, and you can see pictures on your book, in your book, of a number of people hanging out the windows of the World Trade Center. And one of the ones that is, of course, most compelling is the idea of someone jumping, and at first there's that real sense of relief, and then it's utter horror because they know where they're going. So let's take a look at this. What really was going on?
There's a lot of strange things. It's not what we were led to believe. And also the number of, quote, jumpers, if that's what you want to generically call it, I'm not convinced they jumped.
I'm not either.
It's, you know, we don't know even a fraction of how many there were. Various firefighters, first responders, had counted several a minute out of each face of the North Tower. And if you start calculating it, if you have three a minute out of each face, that's four faces, which means 12 people a minute, times the amount of time the building stood, which is a little over 100 minutes, that's 1,200 people.
Yeah. Yeah, now what's also interesting to me is that there were very little remains of anybody found. And if you calculate the number of people who jumped, that may be the only remains that are found.
Correct. It's about the same number. If you have that rough number of 1,200, then you have the 343 firefighters. So we're already up to 1,543. And a few others. I think it was 1,590-something body remains that they had identified.
So it's entirely possible that anybody who did not, quote-unquote, jump, and we'll use that for the time being, their bodies turned to dust much like the towers did.
Mm-hmm.
That of course, is compelling. But then you get to another fact, and you can see these people, and in your book you've got a great close-up picture in figure 30 of these individuals. Not only are they hanging out the side of the building, but they're ripping off their clothes.
Yep.
Now, on first blush, that is against everything we would know, and you point that out too, because, of course, if you're in a situation that's damn near an inferno, because we assume that that in a logical sequence it got intolerably hot there, clothes under normal circumstances would be a buffer, much like that oven mitt you mentioned when you're in that situation of being near the hot oven. Well, same deal here. You would normally think that people would wet their clothes, because, of course, everything we're taught about a fire or a smoke situation is to do that, would wet their clothes, would head down for the exits. Instead, these people were ripping off their clothes, some of them damn near on the way down.
Right. There's one fellow, as they're going down, it looks like a pant leg trailing off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now,
there's the most astounding one, where they're taking their clothes off hanging outside of the building.
Right, right. That was the one. I, you know, in any logical situation that we might be aware of in our existence on the Earth plane, nothing that we know of explains why you'd hang out the 105th floor and start ripping off your clothes.
Right.
So now,
yeah, obviously he wants to live. Because otherwise you would have jumped.
Right, right. Clearly these are people, yeah, who want to live. But so you've got a situation where people are hanging out the tower, ripping off their clothes, and if it's nothing that we understand, at least that's in common evidence, we start to get into the more esoteric things that have been developed. And what did you discover?
Well, think of different kinds of Fields effects. Just for example, I'm not saying this is microwaves, but you think about your microwave oven, but also the active denial system uses microwaves. That's where they fire microwaves at a crowd to get the crowd to go away, and it causes instant pain, and the people, you know, stop. And they say that if your clothes are wet or your hands wet, it's many, many, many times worse. Because you think about water in your microwave oven. A paper towel doesn't necessarily get affected by the microwaves, but water does. So you get a wet paper towel, then it gets cooked.
Right, and any idiot like myself who's tried to dry their socks in the microwave understands this principle completely. For anybody who hasn't tried that, it doesn't work. But it certainly turns them into an interesting molten mass, and I found it fascinating when you uncovered about the crowd disbursement technology, that there actually is, in the literature, there is a warning that the effect is greatly intensified due to wet clothing or extensive perspiration.
Right.
Now, we can assume that these people were wet because of the sprinkler system, if nothing else.
Or whatever you think of. You know, if I'm there and there's a fire, first thing I'm doing is heading to the bathroom before you lose water pressure and get your clothes wet, get any extra clothes wet and wrap it around your head, and then bolt for the door. You're wet. If the sprinklers come on, you're wet. If they don't come on, you're perspiring, and then you're wet. So any way you look at it, you're wet.
Yeah, they absolutely were wet. And we know this for a fact with a phone call that Jack Gentool had with his wife, Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a woman who was on her cell phone. And, you know, John mentioned something, Judy, that I hadn't really thought about. But just imagine if this happened today with everybody who's got their cell phone technology and the camera capability and all of that. It would be very interesting to see what kind of pictures would have been sent out of there. But, of course, in 2001, there were cell phones, but nobody was capturing this on picture.
Right. Or if they were, we didn't see it.
Right. Right. Because it wasn't going anywhere at that point. So here's Elaine talking to her husband, Jack, on the phone. She decided to put wet clothes over her head to try to get out of the building. Her breathing was labored. She was dealing with what she thought was heavy smoke. The last words he said were, "Call me when you get down." It was assumed that she was going to do what she told her husband she was doing. She's heading with the wet clothes right to the exit. Next thing you know, she has jumped out of the building. That's almost impossible to imagine. So take me through what it could have caused her, and like we say, jump, we'll use that word loosely.
It's not clear. There's a couple of, you know, things just looking at it, just, you know, at the beginning. If someone runs into something that's just so painful, it isn't a decision to jump. Think of the hot burner on your stove, you know, the electric burners. You put your hand on it, you don't sit there and decide if you're going to take your hand off of it. Your hand just flies off of it.
Absolutely.
That's one thought. If something is such intense pain, that could cause somebody to fly away from it, you know, to jump as hard as they can. There are also other interesting stories later on. I'm not sure if the book got edited down from quite a thick size, and I'm not remembering if I took this part out or not, where someone talked about floating down the stairs.
No, I didn't read that.
But as it was, there's a photographer who talked about being lifted up, like he was carried by a wave a whole block away from the towers.
Wow.
So there's evidence of levitation involved here. As well as the people in Stairwell B, the 14 who survived,
mm-hmm.
they talked about floating around there. Of course, when weird things happen, we struggle to put them in a context that matches with our past experiences. So, okay, maybe the building's bouncing around and, you know, things are crashing, and that's why they're flying up to the stairs.
It's hard to tell, but the one thing I can say for sure is that nobody, except under circumstances that are inexplicable, decides to jump from the 105th floor because they think it might save their life. Now, clearly, all these people were not suicidal. We know that. And mm-hmm. it isn't even reasonable to assume that when you're talking about enough jumpers that it was raining people. These people are not suicidal. So whatever impulse got them out of that building, either without their decision or by absolute force, such as a field force of some type, none of these people made this decision with the idea that they were leaping to their deaths and so be it. Now, I found one of the interesting pictures of an individual that you talk about in the book who was so relieved to be out of the building until it hit him that he was on the way down to death.
Right. He hadn't figured that out yet. He just looked like he was just relieved.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's a piece.
Right. That idea that, thank God, I've escaped that. And then it hit him. Oh, my God. So
right, and then there's other ones that have a look on, you know, and their body language of, how did I get here? Where am I?
Right, which gives credence to the field force. The other thing, as you point out, is that people have been pole jumping from the beginning of athletics, certainly the Olympics, and we know about how far you can jump when you're propelling yourself, even under the most extraordinary circumstance.
We're standing broad jump,
right,
too.
Right, standing broad jump, we have a very good indication of what's humanly possible. Even if we multiply that, we don't get close to how far some of these people were from this building. And when you fall, under normal circumstances, you don't fall at an angle. So what's going on?
You have to, even as far as they could propel themselves out, you know, like world's record or Olympic record of standing broad jump in the early 1900s, that seems probably pretty reasonable under those circumstances.
Yeah.
This guy is further than that.
A lot. Not a little further. This guy's way out there. What
I don't know if I got into it at this point, but in my next book, I get into this a lot more, where the body parts are found like some distance from the towers. People can't jump that far.
You know, this one chapter alone, as we talk about what we know for a fact of the people who exited this building, you know, a lot of people who want the status quo, who don't want to believe that something extraordinary happened here. And for anybody who's missed Dr. Wood in the past, we're not talking about who did it. We're talking about what's been done. And it's a technology unknown to us, a free energy technology unknown to us, you know, at this point, this type of a demonstration of this. But obviously, when you did your research, you took a look at a lot of other disasters. Did you come across anything where a good number of people were jumping out windows regardless of how far from the building?
Nope. And none of the firefighters had ever seen anything like that in their lives or known of anything like that, people jumping out of buildings.
And they talked about that too. I know certainly amongst themselves, and certainly at the beginning in some interviews. But you're looking at a huge body count, and again, the caliber of people who work in the World Trade Center. It's impossible to believe that any of them thought, in any reasoned way, that jumping out the 105th floor could result in anything but guaranteed death.
Right, right.
So,
and if somebody had chosen to die,
right,
wouldn't they want to take a picture of their loved ones with them, or their identification, you know, the purse, something?
Well, not only that, we know from other disasters, plane crashes in particular, that when the effects are found, if there was enough time that people knew that the end was near, many of them started to, some completed, writing letters to their loved ones, hopefully to be found, so that that there'd be a message, because they knew that that life was short. Not a one of these jumpers, again, to use the word loosely, to our knowledge, did anything that would indicate that they knew they were going to their death when they leapt.
Right, and that's why I would expect them to have something in their hands.
Right, something. Something. Because, firstly, they're coming from desks where they probably all had personal mementos.
And they would want to be identified.
You would think. So all the things that would normally involve a decision are not in evidence here, by any means. And even if you can say, well, somebody would be so disoriented and such shock that they would do this, not at the point of 1,500 people.
Right.
It just defies the imagination. And it's fascinating to me that I had never seen these pictures or seen this brought up prior to this. How'd you come across it?
Just looking at pictures, that the one with the guy taking his pants off.
Yeah.
That picture got me, and I really felt like he was speaking to me.
Interesting.
That, you know, I put myself in his position, thinking about what he's thinking about, and that's when I realized, you know, a lot of people have trouble looking at these. And I kind of did too, but then you realize these people are communicating with us. They want their stories told. And I felt like I made a promise to this guy that I would tell his story. And I thought more and more and looked at more and more information about what are these people thinking, where, you know, as best you could tell, to put them in those positions. But if somebody's facing, think about this guy who's taking his pants off. That is a communication to us for anybody watching. And in that, you know, in that predicament he's in, he's telling us what's going on.
I think you just hit upon something here in human nature that explains when we keep saying, why is nobody bringing this up? Again, these images are so horrific. The thought of this is so horrific that most people are content with the official story and are not about to start to analyze and take this apart image by image to say what's going on here. So there's a number of people that you can almost excuse in terms of not wanting to get into mm-hmm. that. But something that you had noticed even on the very morning of this was that it seemed as if it was orchestrated. And that, before we get into that, in Chapter 4, Magic Shows and the Power of Suggestion, that's a huge one here. We're being told something repeatedly, And for most of us, we don't have any reason to believe that what we're being told isn't what happened.
Right.
Now, of course, adding to that, that most of the people who spend a lot of time investigating this, they are completely absorbed with who did this, not what happened. And as you get sidetracked, and I, you know, it's odd to say sidetracked, but that's what it is, with who did this, it's even easier that the evidence of what happened is so out of the normal to defy, again, common scientific knowledge.
And many people are what I term playing pin the tail on Zonkey. They're blindfolded. They just want an answer, and it's, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. They just need an answer so they can go on. They don't care how you get to that answer. And they usually pick from what they know. Known, you know, I kind of joke saying, BB gun, firecracker, or slingshot. That's all they know about, so it's got to be one of those. But if you don't know this technology, you're not going to be choosing the right answer.
Right. Nobody knows what they don't know. And the interesting thing about this, though, of course, is the evidence itself tells anybody that what we know is impossible to fit the criteria of what happened. And that's where I want to pick it up with the bathtub, because, and that's chapter 5, the way that this building came down, before we even get to the holes and the incidental damage elsewhere, the way that this building came down, again, defies anything that we know with any type of scientific explanation. And right there, that should cause people to say, what the hell? So we've got Dr. Judy Wood. I am so glad that she wrote this book. It's very nicely done. Really nice paper, too. A lot of pictures, a lot of images, and nice, slick paper that that shows them very well. But if you have been looking at this, and particularly you've been to Judy's site, and you say, man, this is so much information, which it is, frankly, this book will let you walk through this in a very logical, managed pace. And I guarantee you that you will come away with things that make you go, that's for sure. We'll pick it up with the bathtub next hour. We will take your questions. Where did the towers go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11 is the title. Of course, Judy Wood, BSMS PhD, is the author. She's got a website devoted to this. I've got a link at Raleigh.net, but wheredidthetowersgo.com, and of course, drjudywood.com, and we'll pick it up right there. We are live. It's Monday, the 21st of January, and next hour and the hour after, it will be a free-for-all with your questions. And, of course, I realized, just as I started to do the outro music and realized, wait a minute, if the intro music didn't work, it's a pretty good guess that the outro music didn't. And, you know, when we rewired the studio before we left, I checked all. Yeah, this is Ghosts in the Machine, that's for sure. But, well, I'll try to figure it out during the six-minute commercial break. Yeah, that's somewhat of a joke, but maybe we'll just sing the bumpers. For those of you who don't like my bumper music, maybe that's the best thing you've ever heard. But otherwise, a half hour from now, we have people calling already. Don't call now. Call a half hour from now, and that'll be, of course, 610-640-6400, right here on The Raleigh James Show.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked. The way she had said, the color of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright, but she's not there. Well, no one told me about her. What could I do? Well, no one told me about her. They all knew, but it's it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there.
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show.
And neither are the towers, which is just the point. And where did the towers go? Evidence of directed free energy technology. A shout out to a number of people, including Steve and Eagle, who say, why not talk about what's going on at this moment? He's absolutely right. Although I wanted to talk about Judy's book as soon as I got it. And, of course, when we scheduled this, did not realize that Tripoli was imploding. Not only is Tripoli imploding, Wisconsin is imploding. And in many ways, maybe that's a good thing. Tomorrow night, all night, Dr. Jerry Corsi, who is probably the best person to analyze, particularly what's going on with regard to the Middle East and Libya in particular. I haven't run away. I'm still in Tripoli, says Gaddafi, by the way. Meanwhile, word is that he is en route to South America. That's where they all go, South America, of course. We'll get to that. Also, looks like George Soros' fingerprints are all over the Moroccan riots and a number of other places. And, of course, speaking of Wisconsin, close to Wisconsin is Illinois, and in Illinois is Chicago. And, of course, tomorrow, the big mayoral election, they really don't need to have it. Rahm Emanuel's going to win. The insurance was that Carol Moseley Braun is running against him. I didn't think you could possibly see a way when you prayed that Rahm Emanuel would head anything. But against Carol Moseley Braun, you betcha, go Rahm. Jerry Chico also in the race. But it's a couple other very small players. But it is definitely Rahm Emanuel's day. A lot of coverage on Chicago radio stations and television stations. And, of course, if you have a Wi-Fi radio, you can start checking that out tomorrow. Polls open, I think, at 7 a.m. All right, so tomorrow night with Jerry Corsi, that. But in the meantime, it sounds like an old story, but the reality is when you start to realize what happened with regard to 9/11 and the World Trade Center, you start to realize that there is a technology that that the general public is not aware is even remotely possible. And you betcha that is not old news by any means. Now, before we get back to Dr. Judy Wood, and again, I've got links at Raleigh.net to her website and to the site for Where Did the Towers Go, to order the book online, which I highly recommend. You won't be sorry about that. Let me mention the Sea Crane Company, ccradio.com. Yeah, of course, one of my favorite sites and favorite companies. And Bob Crane is a radio fanatic. Every product is something that he believes is just great, or in some cases had a hand in developing. And nothing is truer than the Wi-Fi radio, the CC Wi-Fi. If you have a broadband connection to the internet, like a cable or a DSL modem, you got to get a Wi-Fi radio if you don't have one yet. And I was mentioning before about the elections tomorrow in Chicago, and you can bet I'm going to listen to WLS and WGN and a number of other stations as well to check out that coverage. And I'll hear it just like I was sitting right in Cook County. And that's the beauty of Wi-Fi radio. You can hear over 20,000 stations like you were right there. Many of them are over-the-air stations everywhere. Yes, in fact, Whitney had written from Canada saying, you heard about the earthquakes in New Zealand. And yes, I had. And he was mentioning another big quake hitting Christchurch. Try News Talk ZB. The neat thing about it is News Talk ZB is right there on Wi-Fi radio. It's a three-station network across the country, all carrying the same news signal. The Wellington station, probably the most stable. But if you have a Wi-Fi radio, hey, it's like you're sitting in New Zealand. So that is one of the benefits. Another one is, of course, there are so many things that are internet only, or things that the talking heads aren't telling you. Hey, Alex Jones, sure you can hear The Last Hour on XM before me, but if you want to hear the whole show anytime, 24/7, it's on Wi-Fi radio. The CC Wi-Fi, hands down, the best choice. It will pick up any wireless access signal and hold it. You will never have the frustration of not being able to connect. And that, by the way, is a big thing with other Wi-Fi radios. You also will have a remote control with 99 presets and with over 20,000 from which you choose. Bookmarking your favorite 99 is pretty easy stuff. You will have a clock, an alarm, a timer. I keep it right by the bed. It's lightweight. It travels well. And like I say, it'll pick up any wireless access signal under just about any condition. So I love taking it on the road no matter where I am. It's like I have all the stations I have when I'm home. Check it out. The CC Wi-Fi. Maybe the best part is it's only $139.95, a great price. CCRadio.com, the CC Wi-Fi. If you want to give them a call, they'll be back whenever you get up tomorrow, and they'd love to talk to you personally at 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE, and you tell them Raleigh sent you. All right, where did the tower go? Dr. Judy Wood literally put her career on the line for this, and as we've talked about before, Judy, I'm sure that as a scientist, you assumed that when you talked to other scientists about this, they would be right on board, scientifically speaking, to say, hey, we've got to investigate it. And that didn't happen.
No, it didn't. And people who claim to want to know the truth about 9/11 are not interested in this either.
And that's stunning to me, because, again, I was mentioning we get to the bathtub, and... with the World Trade Center and the way it was built, we have almost a laboratory case of examining what would happen if a building like that collapsed on its own or with demolition. And based upon what happened, this dustified. So let's talk about the bathtub and what should have happened under any normal condition.
Well, the towers were built in the Hudson River, and there was a retaining wall like a dike built around them to hold the water out, to hold the Hudson River out. So they call it a bathtub, some call it a slurry wall, which is how they were making it. But the point is, you have 70 feet below the water table is where the basements go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have this, you know, nice concrete wall holding out the Hudson River and then drop a 500,000-ton building on it, you're not going to have much wall left.
Right, right. And there was no evidence that the 70-foot retaining wall was breached on any level.
Correct. And what was even more striking is the damage that occurred to it. The main damage happened days later when they brought in earth-moving equipment. And it was the earth-moving equipment that did the most harm. And once they realized that, there's a picture in the book of the road splitting open where the earth-moving equipment had been.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they realized they needed to set up some new rules about how close to the wall the earth-moving equipment could be and how close to, you know, two of them could be to each other and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But you have this these 500,000-ton buildings each. So you have a million tons of buildings supposedly crashing down. They don't make much seismic signal, but they don't rupture the bathtub. And there's path trains that were built in the early 1900s that go under the Hudson and come up to the bedrock under the World Trade Center in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't spring a leak. There was water that went into those tubes that go through under the Hudson, but you had this open... area with, you know, firemen putting hoses on things and rainwater. But once they dried it out, there was no leak. And it turns out that's where all the water had come from. It's from all the water draining down into the into the tunnels from the rainwater and the fire hoses.
Well, just the idea that earth-moving equipment can cause major cracks, such as on Liberty Street, and they have to rethink how they're doing this, yet the collapse of these massive buildings wouldn't cause that result, that alone defies the imagination. And not to mention that you have a 105-story building collapse. Oh, certainly you can demolish that, and certainly there can be a controlled way to do that, but... you got a hell of a hunk of rubble.
And you have, no matter how you bring the building down, if it gets brought down, it goes thud when it hits.
Yeah.
Even if you use something to cut all the beams, you get that debris coming down.
Now, this is so basic. you don't have to be a mechanical engineer to know this. I'm not necessarily claiming that every man on the street would have this as their top of a mind situation, but certainly anybody who was even remotely versed in the scientific principles of mechanical engineering, just the basics, would be aghast at this. Hell, any construction team would be aghast at this. With regard to that, you mentioned the towers. You're talking, what, about how many pounds, how many millions of pounds?
500,000 tons for each tower.
Okay, 500,000 tons. Now, if you were to take 500,000 tons and put it anywhere, what in the most compact situation, how high would that rubble be?
I'm guessing at least 13 stories or so.
Okay. And that's reasonable. Again, for 105 stories there, it's reasonable. But
that's how tall it's going to be.
Right.
It's also going to spill out width-wise as well.
Right, of course.
At least go across the street.
Well, and we're going to get to that, because that's one of the most interesting things of this, is that normally, and this is, nobody would assert that this was controlled demolition. I realize there may be some conspiratorialists who would, but assuming that this was not controlled demolition, there is absolutely no way that you wouldn't have a lot of neighboring collateral damage when you got 105 stories.
Right. This is a quarter mile tall.
Right. Right. So a quarter mile tall, and yet you can see buildings across the street untouched.
Except for round holes in the windows.
Well, now I want to get there too, because while I'm saying you can see buildings across the street untouched, you can also see cars a quarter a mile away rusted out, or windows that did not shatter but have a round hole in them. Now that right there, I don't think there's any of us who easily understand a technology that does that.
Not you know, traditional technology.
Exactly. And so
let me say something at this point about, you know, folks who think this might not have anything to do with what's going on in Wisconsin and wherever else.
Mm-hmm.
This type of technology can control a population. And things can happen, and it, you know, look what 9/11 allowed, various changes in the world. Things have changed since 9/11.
Oh, sure, and people willingly embrace fascism behind it, willingly say that the Patriot Act is fine, willingly say that we don't have to be constitutional, if you will. But when you talk about that, when we were talking about the jumpers and the technology that exists for crowd control and how disbursement can happen due to very painful radiation that otherwise is not seen or felt, it made me really wonder, because that technology is out there, as it were. Certainly we're aware it exists, and it's interesting that we're not seeing that, at least not identified as seeing that in use anywhere in any of the riots we're seeing around the world.
That is interesting.
Yeah, the active denial system. We had no evidence to see that in use in Cairo, for instance, or anywhere else. Do we know of ADS being used anywhere so far to date?
I do remember when I first started talking about the active denial system, and then they came out and made it public. Within a month of that or so, this was, I think, in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So they've shown segments on TV about it.
Right.
Have a video portion that goes with the book, that if you go to wheredidthetowersgo.com, in the upper right corner of the menu, it takes you to the video pages. And some of those videos are in there where you can see it, you know, examples of it. And that's from mainstream television.
Right. Right, and we've seen, and I've seen that too, the news reports that this technology is out there. I have not seen yet anyone using it in a real life situation.
The thing I remember in 2008 there was some demonstration that was going to be going on in D.C., and they were telling people they're going to use it.
I wonder if they did.
They probably didn't, but I think they were trying to get people used to the idea that they could do it.
Right. Right. Interesting. Now, the other thing, including that there'd be a lot of debris, no matter how you slice it, a lot of debris that's not in existence here, you also would have a seismic impact that was absolutely measurable. We're told that the buildings pancake down progressively. Then why don't we have the seismic evidence of that?
Yeah, if you get a hammer and hit a nail, you know, drive a nail in, try to drive a nail into a bedrock, somebody measuring vibrations in that bedrock would probably pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But this wasn't picked up.
At all.
In a significant degree.
And firstly, supposedly the ground only shook for 8 seconds. So the buildings came down at a rate that is unknown to us. And now it came down, as we look at this, at a force, a lack of force that is unknown to us. So both of those factors together show that what cannot happen happened.
I don't know if it came down in 8 seconds, because we don't know how far it went before it just turned into dust.
Right.
So it may not have even reached the ground.
Right, right. But disappeared, ceased to
right.
exist in some
right.
manner.
And the ground shook for 8 seconds.
For 8 seconds, which, again, defies any imagination. Now, since we've been talking with you a couple of years, I know the book is just new, but your website and the research is not.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been any scientists who have, got religion, as it were, come to the level where they are saying, yeah, I'm on board, something here is not right?
Not really. There is this myth that people don't want to go out on a limb. They'd rather call me a weirdo and then stick with the crowd because they feel safe, even if they don't agree with the crowd. And that phenomenon, once it gets started, it gets a mind of its own.
I agree with that. And it's interesting because to me it doesn't matter if you're a weirdo or not. We're talking about hard science here. We're talking about evidence reported that does not compute. You know, this is not an opinion. They're facts and evidence. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you can be swinging from the lampshades and it doesn't change the facts that are in evidence. And this is where, and of course in chapter 4 you really got into that, the power of suggestion. People are told something and, for the most part they'll believe it. Again, it's stunning to me that scientists who are trained to look at the facts are psychologically compelled not to do so.
Also, it's the warning from Eisenhower about the military-industrial complex is also the academic-industrial complex.
Oh, yes.
And your grants depend on, don't look left, don't look right, keep your blinders on, just do your job, none of your business what's happening beyond that.
That's absolutely true. And I think that many academics who are after those grants, especially in medicine, but any type of science, we see that in the crock of global warming, for instance, are willing to literally throw away reality to be on board. So it's a horrible thing to think that the folks who are really willing to look at this scientifically, like yourself, you're drummed out of academia. You're not going to get a teaching job anytime soon.
Right. I made that decision.
Right. And you knew that at the time.
Yep. I remember my mother told me, if you start looking into this, you won't have a career.
Right.
And I said, if I don't look into it, nobody will have a career.
Right. If you don't look into it, nobody will have a life. Now, of course, when you started to realize what was going on, and certainly it started to take form not too long after the incident, you realized a lot was up here that wasn't computing. Were you expecting, because it's now, going on a decade, were you expecting in the ensuing decade to see other demonstrations?
Yes, and there probably have been other demonstrations of this.
That's interesting. Any idea where?
There's, I haven't studied them very carefully, but from what I can tell, you know, in Oklahoma City, the toasted cars. If you study toasted cars, you recognize them.
Well, and of course, Oklahoma City predated this, but I've said all along I don't know about directional truck bombs, and clearly the buildings across the street were pristine. I've also never seen, based upon a truck bomb by a building, that level of destruction. The first thing I said, if this is real, sue the contractor. But we'll never know, because the one record in Oklahoma City was how quickly that building was demolished.
But if you look at it, there's a picture I have on the front of my website showing the inside of Building 6 and the Oklahoma City building right next to it. And they're indistinguishable, except one has little wheat checks sitting at the bottom. So you can assume that was the World Trade Center.
Interesting.
But it looks like a cylindrical cutout, like somebody took a big post hole digger and just cored out the building with a scallop shapes around the top.
Right.
And the toasted cars across the street. Once you've gone through my book here about the World Trade Center, you'll start recognizing some of the classic signs.
It's just, to me, mind-boggling that we can be a decade out and have this information. And the toasted cars are very real and very well photographed, and very interesting to see that you can see unburnt upholstery and a toasted exterior. You can see the interior totally trashed when it comes to the metal elements of the car, but you can see the plastic molding not touched. And right there, that again defies. You normally would think with the type of force of an explosion to create what it did to the metal, that upholstery and that plastic would be the first to go. And here it is, absolutely unburnt. So it's all in the book, and you've got to get it. Dr. Judy Wood has written it. Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology. I've got links on Raleigh.net to Judy's site and the ordering site for the book. I know you've got questions, and we'll unleash you on Judy for the next couple hours. So by all means, if you've been wondering about it, or if you have something to add to it, the next 2 hours are, in fact, the time to do that. Again, tomorrow night, Dr. Jerry Corsi, you bet we'll be discussing what's going on in the world and Wisconsin, which yeah, which might not be one and the same. All right, so all that in the next couple of days, and Where Did the Tower Go, more of that. Hopefully with you coming up next, 610-640-6400, 610-640-6400.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
Finders, keepers, losers, weepers.
Finders, keepers, losers, weepers.
You should have woke up before you broke up and gave it just a little more try.
You should have told her you loved her before you broke her heart.
Broke her heart.
You should have told her how much you cared, yeah. Right from the start.
To the max. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH.
She'll be my girl. Yeah.
Indeed. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood. Where Did the Towers Go? It is an excellent book. And like I say, I thought I pretty much had a real good grasp of what was going on based upon Judy's website. And yet the book was a real eye-opener. If you've got any questions, and we will get to holes coming up next. We talked about holes before, but again, the idea of cylindrical holes in glass away from the building is, again, something that defies imagination with conventional science. So should you have any questions, it is live. It is the 21st of February, 2011. I mentioned that because, of course, we did repeats for a couple weeks, and you may be thinking that this is yet another one of them, but we are live and waiting for you. 610-640-6400. If you want us to pay for long distance, I will. And that, of course, is 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. All right. So that said, before we get back to it and hopefully to you, want to mention OIDA here for a moment if you are a commercial driver. OIDA, of course, a trade association, the only one exclusively devoted to commercial drivers. And it doesn't matter whether you're a company driver or you're an independent owner-operator. If you're driving for a living, OIDA has your back, and they have since about 1973. I'm assuming if you're not a member, you think it doesn't apply to you or you don't need the benefits. But the reality is that there is no one behind the wheel of a commercial vehicle who doesn't have the same enemy. Collectively, the biggest enemy to any guy or gal on the road professionally is government regulations, the DOT, FMCSA, and such. And when those regulations or legislation that's out there occur, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. A lot of people are lobbying. The only voice lobbying exclusively for you is OIDA. When they go to call, they're respected. They're in the room. Their points are considered. But the only way to get them at the table where the points must be included, where the driver's point of view is finally mandatory to the next set of regulations or legislation, is with a kind of membership that can't be ignored. And that's why I ask you, if you're driving for a living professionally, to join OIDA so that the driver's point of view is more likely to be included in the next go-round. Now, I think the benefits, the discount, the information, and more are just terrific. But priceless is being able to cause the kind of shift that there are a lot of players who don't want to see the driver have that much clout. You put, say, a million members into OIDA, it happens. Now, I should say there's over 5 million drivers professionally in some capacity, local or over the road or part-time or full-time or company or independent. We get one in five to pay $35 for your first year. I'm sorry, $25 for your first year dues. If you say Raleigh James, $25, that's 6.8 cents a day. It's just a no-brainer, and life will change. So please, if you haven't done it yet, join OIDA. It benefits you and every other commercial driver on the road, and I appreciate it. You can do it online at OOIDA.com, OOIDA.com. Fill out the form. Put Raleigh James in who sent you and $25 in the amount, and they accept that, and you're in. Or if you want to do it by phone, that's 800-444-5791, 800-444-5791. You say, Raleigh James, you pay $25. I guarantee it's the best $25 you're going to spend if you are driving professionally. Please join OIDA, OOIDA.com, and I appreciate that. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, Where Did the Towers Go? It is a masterful work. Your calls solicited, 610-640-6400 or 888-876-5593. And Judy, like we were saying earlier, the ramifications of whatever happened here are this is, if anything, just the beginning. This is mind altering to think that there can be a technology that can turn to dust 105 story structures, that can create holes in glass, in some cases, miles away. And yet it seems that the bulk of the population wants to dismiss this. And particularly, like we were saying, hard scientists whose career are on the line, they absolutely want to dismiss this. But the guy or gal on the street, you'd really think that that this would be beyond intriguing. I would think that I would be seeing you on every news interview show out there. Now, have you had any additional interest since the book has come out?
Not really. There's a couple more interviews coming up, but it's amazing how censored this is.
Yeah.
If you Google my name and the title of the book, you really don't get any hints.
That is, again, frightening to me, not only for whatever this technology is that happened on 9/11, but very frightening in terms of how individuals can be led and misled. The idea that people will be told that this is what you're seeing, when in fact any real look at this will show that this is not what you're seeing, and the overwhelming bulk of the population is fine with that, is a very damning piece of evidence.
Or they're fine with saying it's, firecrackers or something else. They assume somebody else is going to take care of it and look into it. And so they can just mind their own business because it's, you know, taken care of. It's not their responsibility. But I see this as our world.
Well, even apart from that, and yes, I agree that if you can somehow put it in such a position that you don't have to act on it, there's a lot of people who would rather just go to the mall or what have you. That's human nature, start to finish. But there is such a dichotomy between what happened and what was reported that you would think there was a healthy contingency. I mean, certainly you have 9/11 groups everywhere that are debating hot debates about who did this. Yet, with this in front of your eyes, there's virtually nobody who's willing to get on board and debate what happened.
Not even debate, acknowledge.
Right.
Yeah. Is this dust or not?
Right. And that's not to say that somebody has to acknowledge precisely what happened, but you'd have to acknowledge what didn't happen. You'd have to acknowledge what you see. And every explanation that we've heard for this just doesn't hold any water. But, you know, as I say that, I start to wonder, because, of course, there was a TWA 700, and people were very comfortable with the center fuel tank exploding. That boggles the mind to me as well.
Flight 800?
Yeah, 800. I'm sorry, 800. Yeah.
There's something else interesting about that.
Yeah.
You know about my federal QTAM case?
Yes, I do.
And the defendants in that case. One of those defendants who was in charge of caring for the WTC steel was also in charge of caring for the Minnesota Bridge steel and was also in charge of Flight 800 remains.
Really?
The families of those killed in the Minnesota Bridge event.
Right.
They took it to court wanting to have a sample of the material they could privately have tested.
Right.
And they're ruled against.
On what grounds?
I don't know. They were denied.
And, of course, anybody who walked away with a piece of debris from 800 was pretty much, outright threatened with legal action, was certainly very quickly put in their place.
Yep.
None of that went out again to independent investigation. And I assume that's the truth with anything resembling outpouring from the World Trade Center. There's nobody who's come across anything that they've been able to test, have they?
Well, anything you can physically test, no, you're not allowed to have your hands on it, but things that have been physically tested, the information is already out there. Like in the FEMA report, talking about the Swiss cheese beams. How do you get steel beams turning into Swiss cheese? I'm not saying physically turning.
Right. That type of hole pattern, exactly. And that gets to the holes. All right, so if FEMA acknowledged there's a Swiss cheese pattern, did they conclude how that was remotely possible?
No, nope, just shrugged their shoulders. So you don't need to test it yourself. You can see what they've determined.
But with regard to, say, the Minnesota Bridge, did anybody test that publicly?
Not that I'm aware of, but I was there right afterwards. Strange smell in the air, very strange smell. But what I noticed, I was just getting ready to drive up there when it happened. So as soon as it happened, I was downloading pictures as fast as I could. Because what I saw in those pictures pretty amazing. I gave a talk in Madison 2 days later, 3 days later, and as a pop quiz at the end of my talk, I showed pictures from the Minnesota Bridge. I said, now, can you recognize anything? You know, toasted cars, fumes. What was so amazing is the bridge went down horizontally. You have to have, like, 12 different supports break all at the exact same time. And with the World Trade Center, they brought in dirt to, you know, look like cover up the fuming material, then scoop it up and take it out and bring in new dirt, you know, to clean it up with. What was so puzzling is the Minnesota Bridge had dirt on it.
That is interesting. Now, was there ever an explanation from whence that dirt came?
Nope. Little dirt trucks sprung across the bridge. They were doing road. What was interesting is they were doing road work.
Right.
And had half of the road closed, so they only had half the load on the bridge.
Right. Right, which, of course, everybody was talking about that at the time, and it was postulated that maybe the work somehow destabilized, but there was nothing in that would lead you to believe that that was, again, remotely possible.
And how do you get all the supports to give away at the same time? And when we were there, you couldn't get within, like, half mile of the place. It was like Fort Knox. It's very strange, like, taking pictures also was off limits.
That's the interesting thing that we're seeing more and more of. And, of course, we draw different conclusions in different situations. But, for instance, the Gulf oil spill, the biggest threats were of anybody who would dare be near the scene. There was probably more money spent on keeping people away than there were helping the people in need. So the idea that they don't want any independent verification of virtually anything seems to be business as usual now.
And right, and currently, as we speak, John Hutchison is down there using sound waves to try to clean the water.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being barred from it. He's doing it for free. You know,
right.
It's not costing anybody anything. What's the problem?
Yeah, that's the thing. Many people who have been there with good intentions and with nothing that could be considered to be a threat in any way, public or scientific, all are being barred. I'm surprised that he's even been able to get close enough to be on the scene.
It's taken a bunch of work. A friend of his, Nancy Lazarin, I don't know if I pronounced the last name correctly, have been working on it for several months now. And really, hats off to them for making that effort.
Right. Where are they going to go from here with that, if they're being barred from doing it?
They're still continue working at it.
Interesting.
They've worked with different people there, but there's a lot of head-in-the-sand type of responses.
The other interesting thing about all this is that we're talking about events through various political administrations. So anybody who thinks that it is one party or one group of individuals, that goes out the window right away. Whatever this is in terms of individuals who are involved or truly aware, this is above the political spectrum that we know about.
Thank you very much. I kind of wonder if, you know, having separate countries is just a show in this really one world government already.
Yeah, and of course that would explain why a lot of these countries are breaking down with no immediate leadership there. That's why I was talking about tomorrow. We might mention what's going on with people like Soros, but there's a lot of reason to wonder about supranatural governments. What's in front of us, though, like I say, we know for sure that it's not at the behest of one political party or any group of people that we know. We know that things are incurring multiple places, multiple times, similar events. We know that the World Trade Center is clearly demonstrative of a technology that is heretofore unknown to us, and you know, the Tesla Hutchinson effect. You start to look at what went on there and you start to say, hey, this is where Tesla's free energy technology is at play. Now, of course, this is strictly conjecture because you as a scientist can look at evidence, but drawing a conclusion like why is somewhat outside your purview. But are you of the mind to think that this is linked to free energy?
Well, what happened on 9/11?
Yeah.
Definitely, because if you want to add up how much energy it would take to do all of this, where does it come from? It has to come from somewhere. How do you get... it's like there's obviously a different type of physics than what we are taught in high school or junior high.
Right, that's... absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, not debatable. There is nothing in what we've seen that are explained, not only junior high, but even if you get into folks like yourself, PhD scientists, nothing in the curriculum explains this.
And also, what's pretty puzzling is, why is it called Con Edison? You know,
I know, yeah, right.
Why is it called Toledo Edison?
Yeah.
Why is it called, you know, Southern California Edison? When Edison was all about direct current and Tesla is about alternating current.
Yeah, Tesla, talk about a whitewashing. Talk about a guy who absolutely never got his due, and only recently have people started to talk about Tesla. He was, to the government that wishes to control you, he was clearly the enemy of the people.
Yeah, right, but he brought us alternating current.
Yeah.
But think about what he came up with. You move a conductor in a magnetic field and you get electricity. Think about what's causing that. You know, that's something from nothing in a way.
Right.
Then you start looking at tornadoes. You know, where does that energy come from? It looks like it's something from nothing. And that's a sort of a natural case of, I believe, the same technology.
Right.
Now, yeah, I'm not saying, I will not give a name to the technology, but I can describe what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that somebody could reproduce it, John Hutchison. You know, Tesla could do it, but you read about that in a book. I went and visited John Hutchison. I saw him do it. So I know that's real. You know, it's not just a story in a book. Not saying that Tesla didn't do it, but...
Right, but we would have no way to know that. We're just...
Right, that's before my time. But
right.
This is in the here and now that you can actually witness it. And seeing that the same outcome and the same weird phenomena, you know, a whole laundry list of things, down to the round holes in windows.
Right. I want to get to that, but Jennifer in Missouri has been hanging on quite a while. I've been ignoring her. So, hello, Jennifer. How are you?
I am excellent. How are you this evening?
All right, thanks for calling.
Great.
What's on your mind?
Here's my thing.
Okay.
There's a reason why they don't want that water, that oil out in the water, out in the Gulf cleaned up. It's highly toxic. It causes cancer. They don't want it cleaned up because they want to kill as many people as possible, possibly. That's my theory anyway.
It wouldn't surprise me. The idea of too many useless eaters is certainly one that is out there. So I would tend to give that a lot of credence.
I wonder why there's
less Social Security is now.
Yeah.
They are making me pay an overpayment basically on some erroneous information, but they're doing this to tons of people on disability. They want to keep the poor poor. The elite rich, and then kill off the poor.
It makes sense to me, Jennifer. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for having such an accessible website for people with screen readers.
Oh, you betcha.
That's
a big thing with me. I'm glad you noticed. Thanks.
Yeah, I emailed you about it, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I did get that. And mystreamingserver.com is not third party. It's just another one of my sites. And if you've been there, you know that it is super accessible.
I noticed. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure.
Promoting you on Twitter, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that, Jennifer.
No problem.
All right. So, yep. You know, the idea of population control, Judy, is one that increasingly I think many people are concerned about, that whether it's chemtrails or whether it's the Gulf or what have you, the idea that that there are those who want there to be fewer of us. When I read about the crowd control technology and many of the things that we do know about, like tasers, which are not so harmless, it leads me to believe that there's a certain amount of credence to that. Now, I don't know that that fits into any of your research and where you're going, but have you gotten into the why behind what you're seeing?
In terms of what? What do you mean, why?
In terms of the tests of this technology and the demonstrations of this technology, what's behind this?
You mean the motive?
Yeah.
Right? Well, we can look to see, you know, what happened. I don't really like to speculate on the whodunit aspect, but one thing I do want to be clear with is that we don't know. You know, those who say it's an inside job, that implies that they know who did it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be in this country.
Oh, of course not.
And, you know, but there's still motive for those in our government to want to cover it up for a lot of reasons. Like my court case, well, it didn't quite get to court, but they dismissed it saying that they were ignoring the law to be able to dismiss it.
I want to pick it up right there, because that, to me, happens too often now and is really indicative that we don't have a constitution and we don't have a republic as we know it. So, Judy's Key Tom case, we'll get into that. But where did the towers go? Evidence of directed free energy technology. By all means, if you've got questions, Judy is the woman who has many answers, or certainly can point you in a real direction to do some investigation, and this book will help you immeasurably to that effect. The idea of free energy and how that would transform society is, again, just mind-boggling. And the idea that that technology is here and not available to us is perhaps the greatest insult. So where did the towers go? You can order it. I've got a link at Raleigh.net. And you can give us a call at 888-876-5593 or 610-640-6400.
It's the Raleigh James Show. You are under my power. It is the power of love. Wonderful and worth it. That's what it says. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. That's 8888-RAWLEIGH.
Yeah, magic. That's what it was with 9/11. Actually, in many ways, it was magic, in terms of the only way a magician gets over is a sleight of hand. Watch one hand while the other is busy doing whatever. The power of suggestion is huge. And when you start to get into 9/11, the only way that you can believe that these buildings collapsed is through the power of suggestion and by suspending disbelief. These buildings dustified, and I think Judy Ward's word for that is a great one, because that's precisely what happened here. And when you take a look at that alone, it's not possible that these buildings, quote-unquote, collapsed. There's no evidence for it whatsoever, but there is a lot of evidence that free energy technology exists. And the ramifications of that, and especially the ramifications of that being withheld from us, is enormous. I could go on and on, and of course I will, but I promised your call, so Wilson and Eric will both be up next. Then we will get into fuzzballs and more. If you don't have the book, and you probably don't because it just came out, I think it's a must-have volume. It's well done. It makes it very simple to understand, and not only the verbiage, but the pictures as well, and the way it's laid out. And you can get it. I've got a link to wheredidthetowersgo.com, of course, at drjudywood.com, information there as well. And as I promised your calls, it is Monday, the 21st of February. That's President's Day, by the way, 2011, and you betcha 610-640-6400. I promise, and you're lining up, so I'll stop hogging Judy for a moment. But before I do, let me mention the Sea Crane Company again. And, you know, originally listening to the radio for me was just strictly entertainment. Anymore, it's a lifeline. It's all the information that you're not hearing from the talking heads, all the things that maybe you're not seeing on television or hearing on the more popular commercial stations. Well, it's available to you. I mentioned Wi-Fi radio earlier, and if you've got a broadband connection, that is a terrific way to go with the CC Wi-Fi. But if you don't have a broadband connection, even if you don't even have electricity, a shortwave radio is a true lifeline, and the Sea Crane Company has some great ones. The CCSW is a terrific choice. It's on sale. It's $124.95, so that's a great price. It's got a wonderful AM section, probably my favorite AM section out there, because while it is a digital readout, it's true rotary fine-tuning. It's got the twin-coil ferrite antenna and much more. Great FM section. All of the shortwave bands. And the deal about shortwave is, yes, it's interesting to hear what's going on from the perspective of other countries in the world, particularly what's happening, say, today in Tripoli. Very interesting to hear it worldwide. But the other thing about shortwave that's probably lesser known is that there are a growing group of American broadcasters who you can hear absolutely free of charge, day or night, and you'd be amazed. Alex Jones, a couple times a day. My show, WWCR 3.215. So you've got so many things. The Power Hour, many, many choices, absolutely free. And, you know, in the event of the kind of emergency that knocks out just about everything else, I'll tell you what, shortwave may be the last thing standing. So it's worth your while to have a good shortwave radio, and the CCSW is that. Now, a lot of people say, I got a shortwave radio, I can't pick up anything on it. There's a trick, and that is you got to have an external antenna. Doesn't need to be external to the house or anything like that. You can just alligator clip some small diameter insulated wire onto the whip antenna and roll it out across the room, and you've made one. But once you've got an antenna, then the band really will come alive, I promise you. If you're not into little crafts projects, well, you can buy shortwave antennas inexpensively, too. You can check that out at the Sea Crane catalog as well. The CCSW from the Sea Crane Company, ccradio.com. You tell them Raleigh sent you. If you want to call them, 800-522-8863. They'll be back tomorrow morning, 800-522-TUNE. But ccradio.com, you can do that right now. All righty. So without further ado, we got Wilson, Eric, Linda, and Ralph lined up, and I promised, and I'm delivering. So, Wilson, you're on with Dr. Judy Wood. Wilson. There you are.
Yes. First of all, I think she ought to be, Dr. Wood ought to be nominated for the Nobel Science Award for looking into this, trying to find out what happened.
You know, I tend to agree with that, because when you really get down to science, everybody else is ignoring the evidence, and that's criminal. So, yeah, I'm for that, Judy. We'll nominate you.
Yes.
Thanks.
And one thing, years ago, there was a military bear flew up over one of the Middle Eastern countries, and it was supposed to be a car bomb, but the building looked just like Oklahoma City. it was sheared off.
Interesting. Do you recall that, Judy?
Yes, in one of my legal documents that I sent in, it had something to do with Applied Research Associates. There's a building, a picture of the building that's also with the Oklahoma City building. It's like pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, vertical slice, and there's nothing else there.
Interesting.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Oh, and having a brain seizure.
Well, when you think of it, call us back. All
well,
right.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Wilson.
Hey,
I appreciate
it. Could I add this, Raleigh?
Yes.
Yeah. Last night, there was a replay of Catherine Austin.
Uh-huh.
And if you recall, she said it was a spiritual battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think this would fit into that category also.
You betcha. Thanks for calling.
All right. God bless. Right. Bye-bye.
Eric in Florida. Hello, Eric.
Yeah, hey, good evening.
Go on. Talk to Judy.
Hello.
Hey, hello, Raleigh. Hello, Dr. Judy. Mm-hmm. This is Eric in Florida calling. I want to first say that the book by Dr. Wood is an incredible achievement. It's a beautiful book. It's in many colors, very sharp color photographs. The tables and charts are just very easy to read.
Agreed.
And so I wanted to thank Dr. Wood for that. But also, I wanted to see, I'm tuning in a little late, but I wanted to see if Dr. Wood might like to quickly sort of address some of the concerns that people that may be new to the 9/11 information that have been snared by some of the other types of explanations that are out there, like the atomic mini nukes, the thermite theory, and the idea of missing floors somehow, you know, contributing to the fact that there was nothing in the bottom of the pile. So that would be my first question, if she'd like to just quickly address those. And the second question I have for her is if she would like to address how the 9/11 truth movement has been thwarted and kind of turned into a controlled opposition, and what her take is on that.
All right. Thanks for calling, Eric.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Go for it, Judy.
Let's see. The first thing is about, you know, mini nukes and so forth. I have a chapter devoted to what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And why. They, you know, nukes go boom, bombs go boom, and they blow things up. And there's a theory out there, speculation, whatnot, about this nuclear bomb underneath the World Trade Center that blew up the building but somehow left the bathtub intact.
Yeah.
You'd laugh at that. Actually, NIST said, and I have a recording of them on my website, saying it was not a seismically significant event as to cause damage to the pipelines that went underneath the towers.
Right.
The pipelines didn't get damaged, but you had this building falling on it.
Right, and you had no registered seismic activity that would be commensurate to that type of explosion.
And there's essentially no seismic signal at all outside of background noise for Building 7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a whisper quiet thing. And I think, you know, why can't be bombs in the building and whatnot? You need to have something crash to the ground for that. This building did not slam to the ground. The contents, the outer walls, if you had nothing left on the inside, there are outer walls that have to get to the ground. And they didn't go. They didn't make it to the ground.
Right, right. That's what we're talking about with regard to that dustification. Nothing made it to the ground for the most part. There's nothing in this that would lead us to believe that planes hitting a building and the building consequently falling down could have possibly happened in this.
There's other things like some first responders over on the Manhattan Bridge saying, you could feel the heat. You know, the towers were so hot, you could feel the heat from the Manhattan Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That's like 3/4 of a mile away. But paper wasn't burning.
Well, right, and that's also like we were talking before with the with the cars that the plastic and the upholstery not touched, but the metal rusted to a point that would normally only be seen when there was no interior whatsoever.
Correct. And what Eric also brought up about the truth movement, one has to wonder, you know, when something like this is going to occur, there's going to be people asking questions afterwards. Did those who planned 9/11 just not plan for a cover-up? You know, just slip their mind? No, they would plan for a cover-up. And so it's what I term collection agencies. They collect people. You get organizations together to collect people, to attract them in, so people are asking questions, are going to gather, because people like to work in groups. So you gather these up, and you keep them going around in circles, keep them out of trouble, and keep everybody under control. And if you find somebody who won't go in lockstep, you train everyone else to attack them. And it isn't the people who join these groups. They don't have evil intentions. They think they're doing the right thing. They are just following along, thinking their leader is aiming in the right direction. And the group takes a mind of its own.
Yes.
And right now, there's so many people out there who believe that all sorts of strange things about what I present and will never dare to look at my work. They won't dare to go to my website. And that's an amazing feat to train people to not look at the evidence.
And that's something we're doing increasingly, unfortunately. And you mentioned the group mind, and sociologically speaking, we always know that the group mind is less intelligent and more emotional. As a collective, it is much easier to get them to deride you and not look at evidence. That's just the human nature of group activities. And a lot of despots throughout time have used that to their advantage. But anybody who would look at this evidence, while it's possible they may not reach the same conclusion of what it is, there is no doubt that they have to reach the same conclusion of what it isn't.
Bingo.
And that's the fascinating thing to me. The idea that something can so thoroughly dustify. And, you know, while it wasn't the towers, the incident of the plane going down in Pennsylvania has always left me with some questions, because I've seen a lot of aftermath of plane crashes. And there's normally, you're going to find an engine, you're going to find a body, you're going to find debris. You're not going to find nothing. And that seems to be the hallmark of this start to finish is nothing. You know, in the World Trade Center, even there were tons of loose paper in the building, for God's sakes. There were tons of porcelain in the building from sinks and such. There should be some evidence of this.
Some evidence of a toilet.
Yes, absolutely. Some evidence.
There should be at least 3,000 toilets there, and there's not even one recognizable part of a toilet.
Right, we're a piece of a toilet. That's right. We're not even talking about the full commode, just a porcelain piece. And, you know, that, of course, goes back to what we were talking about with regard to the quote-unquote bathtub and how that would have had to have been had this building come down. But, you know, with regard to this technology, you know, we were talking about the cars where the plastic and the seats were untouched. Well, in this building, we don't even have that. In these buildings, everything turned to dust.
Right. I think what might occur is that, you know, as you get away from the center of where it's aimed, you know, whatever, however it's aimed, however it's directed, the effects start tapering off. And when the last things taper off, you get this toasted effect. Yeah. And it almost seems like there's a connection with this grounding. The cars are toasted. Cars are up on tires.
Mm-hmm.
But things just like cars that are in the ground, like signposts.
Right.
They're not toasted. The trees, bushy trees, not burnt, not toasted.
Fascinating.
So, and then you see, the front car door is completely toasted. What I mean by toasted, it's not necessarily burned. It's toast. It's history. You can't fix it. It's too far gone.
It's turned to rust.
And then, you know, the back door, precisely at the seam between the two, it's in pristine condition. Like that rubber gasket that separates the two may have insulated one from the other.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? That's just so out there in terms of again, we know what this is not. All right, we got Linda in Houston. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Judy. I'd like to thank you so much for your work. And the question, I know you don't like to speculate, but I was wondering if you have any idea how the source was directed. In particular, do you think it could possibly have come from a satellite above Earth or a TR-3B trying for anti-gravitic craft? Or do you think it was some device implanted in the building? And in particular, I was wondering, how about that Larry Silvers on Building 7 when he said we're going to have to pull it and it fell later? So what does he know about the situation? And was that Building 7, was it brought down by a free energy device similar to the other two World Trade Towers?
Good questions, Linda. Keep listening. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for calling.
Yeah.
As for the Larry Silverstein thing, I call these Easter eggs, like three-year-olds Easter egg hunt.
Mm-hmm.
They're laying out there to be found, and when somebody finds them, they think they've really got something.
Mm-hmm.
And the pull it. Well, you stop and think about the details of it, and meaning, you know, folks say that this is to pull it as in controlled demolition. So you're telling me the firemen go around with sticks of dynamite in their back pocket just in case? They're not engineers. They don't know how to do controlled demolitions. They're not in the demolition business. Why would they have sticks of dynamite in their back pocket ready to blow up a building at a moment's notice? It makes no sense. Also, it makes no sense to admit it on camera. You know, there's obviously something taken out of context or taken out of, you know, understanding-wise. And you don't just decide to blow up a building. And there's another myth that often goes around about the BBC announcing it beforehand.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Well, One Liberty Plaza, well, it became a joke. Oh, One Liberty Plaza just collapsed again because it was prematurely announced as collapsing. One Liberty Plaza, to this day, is still standing.
Interesting.
It's, you know, people don't know what's happening. Different rumors get going, different people confuse something with something else, and comments get stated. And so these people didn't know what was going on that day. It's completely understandable. They would get confused with what the news was.
Yeah, and I certainly think there's a lot of people who are putting together information that may or may not pan out. Again, what's different about what you have undertaken is you literally are looking at facts in evidence and drawing scientific conclusions, particularly about what this cannot be.
Great. So. My philosophy that you listen to the evidence carefully enough and it'll tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, keep listening until you do.
Yeah, we got Ralph in Alaska. Hello, Ralph. What part of Alaska?
Well, I'm very close to Wasilla, where Palin, you've probably heard of her, ex-Governor Palin's from.
Oh, yes. I know Wasilla very well. All right. So,
oh, yeah. Really?
Yes, absolutely, because I used to drive between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and, of course, I'd always stop at Wasilla.
Oh, okay. Well, I live out about 20 miles. I've got that book, by the way, just absolutely astounding book.
Yeah.
It's a top-quality book. But I've got two major points that I would like to get across, and I thought the first one was just absolutely shocking when I found this out. And this was confirmed by Jerry Liepart, which is the attorney that took the cases. And it's the first one is that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology,
mm-hmm.
only investigated the factors leading to the initiation of the collapses of the WTC towers and not the collapses themselves. This was a letter that was sent to Dr. Judy Wood. They didn't investigate the collapses. And then Jerry Liepart went on to say, he said, this is something that really needs to be out there. So we have the only comprehensive investigation existing today in the forum. He said, number two, the people that actually have the information, which was named by Dr. Judy Wood, the Science Applications International and Applied Research Associates, those folks know the technology, who had it. I'm not saying they did it, but they have the knowledge, and those are the people that actually know that. Now, first of all, I was led to believe there had been an investigation. There wasn't. Now we have the actual empirical evidence. We know the people to ask. So my suggestion is buy the book, send it to Congress. Here's the evidence that you paid for that you didn't get, and we also will help you identify these are the people that have the answers. Now, why don't you get them in a hearing or whatever, and let's find out the rest of the story. That's my first point.
Yeah.
The second one, and the second point is that I find astounding, too, is the non-self-quenching aspects of this, how this stuff came down and continues to get smaller, and the issues that Dr. Judy Wood, as she would address also with Bankers Trust Building, how this isn't just something that happens and then it quits. It's an ongoing thing. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know why it doesn't stop. I don't have the answer, but those are my two points.
Excellent points, and Ralph, thank you for calling. And I agree with Ralph, by the way, Judy, that Congress should be given this book, particularly those who ran on tickets where they wanted to disclose a number of things. I'd love to see this viewed by people.
Send it to your congressman. Send it to your senator.
Yeah, absolutely, and definitely Ron Paul should get a copy of this without a doubt. I want to talk about Applied Research Associates and stuff because if there are people who have the answers, for most of us, we flat out never heard of them. So I'll have you comment on Ralph's comments and another hour with Dr. Judy Wood, and you're welcome to join us as well. 610-640-6400, 610-640-6400. Or if you're willing to pay for long distance, 888-876-5593. We'll pick it up right there. You've got to read the book.
James Show.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together. Give me some of that old.
Out of her car and on your radio, it's the Empress of the Interstates, Raleigh James. Call Raleigh at 888-876-5593, 8888-RAWLEIGH.
Stacks at its finest. Sam and Dave, I thank you. We're talking to Dr. Judy Wood. I thank you to buy the book. I would definitely, if I were you, I would also pass it along, particularly out of your lawmakers and anyone else. Where did the towers go? This is a beautiful book. It is in full color. It's glossy paper. It is a pleasure to read. The pictures will blow your mind. And, of course, when you read what Dr. Judy Wood is highlighting, there is absolutely no way you can possibly conclude that planes hit this building and they fell down. All right, this is not about who did it or anything like that. It's about the evidence in front of your eyes, hence the title, Where Did the Towers Go? So we'll pick it up there, another hour of questions. We will get back to Ralph's comments and more. But 610-640-6400 if you want to join us, 610-640-6400. But before we do, I want to talk about something as simple as soap. You know, in some ways, this is another situation. You go to the grocery store, the drugstore, you buy a bar of soap, you think you're getting soap. You're not. They're called beauty bars or complexion bars for a reason. There's usually no soap in them. There's a ton of chemicals, and no wonder visits to dermatologists are through the roof in terms of numbers of complaints. You go back to real soap and you make some startling discoveries, whether it's soap you're using on your body or soap you're using on your laundry or just your general cleanup. You'll discover that real soap is non-toxic, not harmful, gentle on you and the items you use it on, and at the same time, more effective and harsher on dirt. In other words, it works better while it is gentler on you. On top of that, in the long run, it costs less. It's made in America. It is all natural. And there's no downside to this. You can find out more at 5starsoap.com. You can use the number or write out the letter. It doesn't matter. 5starsoap.com. They've got a sample pack. And, you know, I recommend that because I can talk about it till the cows come home. But until you try it for yourself, you won't know. You'll get 4 bars of soap, a bottle of shampoo, a bottle of laundry powder, a bottle of dish soap. And that's $20 plus shipping to your house, then you'll know. Their dish soap is terrific. I use it on every cleanup job around here. And, you know, with 4 big Bernese Mountain Dogs, I got cleanup jobs. And I'll tell you what, all those toxic chemicals I was suckered into using, this outdoes them, and it's totally non-harmful, not toxic. So that's terrific. Their laundry powder is so wonderful. I just ordered another 25 pounds of it, in fact. I'll tell you what, I could throw out my fabric softener because the clothes, when you use real soap, come out fluffy and soft naturally. So that's another group of chemicals I don't have to use. It lasts longer because you need less of it, and it is tremendously effective. There's less lint in my lint trap because, of course, it's not destroying the clothes. So that would be 5starsoap.com, 5starsoap.com. And, of course, I found out about it years ago from Alex Jones. I tried the bar soap, and I stopped itching after 40 years. And I said, this has got to be coincidence. This can't be right. And as time went on, I realized I wasn't itching again. And that's when I realized, yeah, you go back to a real product that's all natural, non-toxic, not harmful, and it works wonders. 5starsoap.com, 5starsoap.com. I've also got a phone number for you. Let me look that up because not everybody can go online, and you can order by phone. And if you have any questions, they'll be happy to answer all of them. But 5starsoap.com, family-owned and operated in California since 1947 to this day, and the phone number is 800-340-7091, 800-340-7091, 5starsoap.com. You tell them that Raleigh sent you. Now, before we get to Don in Missouri, want to get back to Judy. And, you know, Ralph mentioned something very interesting, that there are people with the answers, such as applied research technology.
Applied
Research Associates, they've been around for years. I know they were started in New Mexico, and they do everything from analyzing asphalt to analyzing things I can't even pronounce. When you go to their website, you can see their government contracts, and it's a ton of them. What do we know about this company?
The contractors on the NIST report, the most number that came from any one company came from ARA, mm-hmm. Applied Research Associates. And their area of expertise, the leader of the of that team, is area of expertise is energy weapons.
And there is a lot of research there. That's what I mean, whether it's down-to-earth asphalt or whether it's all sorts of energy weapons and their effectiveness. These people are all over the map in the U.S. and Canada. So what contracts have they had that might have related to this?
Yeah, they may still have one, but they had a 5-year contract during the time from 9/11, and also after that it was renewed during the time they're on the NIST report, the objective of the contract was to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that exists or is even being developed. That is, they not only know what technology it was, they know whose technology it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're defending my case. If my case was allowed to go to discovery, guess who gets put under oath?
Now, let's talk about that, because, again, we're hearing more and more, not only in your case, but other cases that seem to have a lot of merit. We tend to think that things like this will have to see the light of day in court, but increasingly cases like yours are dismissed without comment. So tell me what you filed and what they said.
What I filed was a case, you have to prove fraud. It was a whistleblower case. And it was based on my request for correction to NIST, which was my act of whistleblowing, where I told them that their contractors committed science fraud, and I showed the evidence for science fraud.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Underwriters Lab made four mock-ups of the WTC floor, two full-scale, two half-scale. They cooked them at twice the temperature for twice as long, and they still couldn't get it to fail to support load. So they called the test, because why, you know, keep cooking them? Yet they signed off on a report saying that fire did it. That's fraud.
Right.
It goes on down the list for what each one of them did. Plus, NIST admitted their report's fraudulent, that they did not analyze the collapse, even though that was their mandate from Congress to determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Towers didn't collapse, so they just assumed they did and then did this hypothetical deal, and it looks like they did an analysis of some sort because they have 10,000 pages of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Who was involved in the write-up of this report? SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
One of their areas of expertise is psychological operations. Would they be good at writing a good storybook?
Well, yeah, they might also explain why the public is buying this stuff.
Exactly. And also, they were in charge of security at the site, so they know all those dirt trucks that were coming and going and whatever else. And so if you would get these people under oath, you have three choices. They tell the truth, they lie under oath, or they plead the Fifth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't get it to that point, then everybody's home free. While this case was ongoing, a new law was passed to have accountability for the bailouts. And they made it retroactive back to about 3 weeks before my case was decided. And it was to cover all cases that were pending as of that date, so it included my case. And what it did was the courts had been, you know, getting it more narrow until it didn't apply to any case, you know, the laws that they had been using.
Mm-hmm.
So Congress reemphasized, they call it the Fraud Enforcement Recovery Act, to restate what the law was about. They even reversed one of the decisions that the defendants in my case were using to support their side. And what the judges did was say, well, we're going to ignore that law so that we can dismiss the case. What this new, you know, FERA law was, it stated you didn't have to prove, before you had to prove, you know, where somebody was standing when they had premeditated intent to defraud the government and where the second hand was on the clock at that exact moment.
Mm.
And, you know, it's something impossible. But what it came to is all I needed to prove was that they knowingly allowed fraudulent information to go forward. Done.
Right. And they just dismissed it without comment.
Right. Well, the Supreme Court dismissed it without comment. I'd like to add something else here. Raleigh, you have a copy of my book.
Yes.
I don't.
What?
You have a copy of my book before I do.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
Why don't you have it?
The story of this book is it's been in the works for a couple of years. I had a publisher who refused to print the book, and he wouldn't let me out of the contract either for a couple of years. Finally, thank goodness, he let me out of the contract, and I got it published elsewhere. The shipment of the book was sent to various people around the country for safety reasons. So I had the shipment split up. The shipment that was to come to me, and only the one that was coming to me, got flagged by Homeland Security.
You're kidding me.
Nope. And they need to radiate it or do something with it. They've had it for a little bit here.
Maybe they should read it.
Yeah, I was hoping. Maybe they're reading it through their X-ray machine.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I mean, reading it might be a good thing. Now, before we, and by the way, I'm not meaning to gloss over their refusal to hear this, because, of course, we see this more and more, and what we discover is that we do not have the system that many Americans also believe are in place in our republic. It's not. You can bring a legitimate case, and right down the line, for whatever reason, they can decide, oh, we're not listening to you.
Yep, and my evidence was never evaluated.
Right, right, which is, I would normally be absolutely outraged, but unfortunately, I hear this so much, I've come to expect it. And before we move on, it's interesting, when I was looking up ARRA, you can't really find out who the people are. You find out they're employee-owned. Who they are, I don't know. But when you look at their contracts, you do get all the things like vulnerability, survivability, target descriptions, weapons effectiveness, support to current operations. And then you get to other projects like the Cognitive Urban Scenario Program. I don't even want to know what that is. But, yeah. So
there was a picture they had on their website, but after I made it public, they took it down, and I had submitted it to NIST, saying, "What is ARA trying to tell us here?"
Yeah.
It was a drawing, a hypothetical drawing, but you knew exactly the perspective of where the drawing was from, because the buildings in the picture were so unique. It was as if you were looking down West Street across the VC Street intersection. And there was this building, like Building 6, with a hole in it, no material, just missing building. There was what looked like a Building 3 there, tanks in the street, missing building. It was amazing. Like, are they bragging or what?
Yeah.
What are they trying to tell us?
Yeah, that's really, really frightening. All right, before we get to Don in Missouri, Howard in Arkansas, welcome.
Hello, Raleigh. How are you tonight?
All right, you tell us.
It's an ironic thing that she was talking about the Murrow building. I was telling John, I'll be as quick as I can. I lived there in Tulsa, and I was watching the news, of course, you know, like everybody would do. They brought in this guy from Los Alamos, Raleigh, that was an engineer that designed the nuclear weapon, a tactical nuke. And he said that he stopped by the seismographic office in western Oklahoma, and I'm assuming they're in Mustang, and picked up a copy of that seismograph that took place the day of the bombing. And he brought with him a seismographic reading from Los Alamos where he had tested a bomb that he had designed, and he overlaid it, and it fit perfectly except for what was in front of this big, black, nasty-looking blob. And he said this was the homemade bomb that he built as a detonator bomb to set off the bomb that he had stolen. And that's where the conspiracy came in, that Tim actually stole these bombs and that the government did not want them to know about it. And that's why they tore that building down, dug a hole out there north of I-35 and buried it in the ground and covered it up with concrete and Constantine wire because it was hot.
Interesting. All right, thanks
for that.
And
that was on the news. And one time only.
Yeah, I'll bet. All right, thanks for that. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, one thing that Howard said that I find interesting, Judy, is that there have been so many things that have been on the news one time and one time only. And I think that I wonder, a lot of it may be disinformation, but occasionally something will slip out that they probably would have preferred not been said.
Oh, like the afternoon of 9/11, there was supposedly a demolitions expert who said, that's obviously controlled demolition. And then 5 days later, he retracted that statement. And then, as the story goes, he got $85 million in grant money soon after that. So that's to lead you to believe what? And as it turns out, the year before 9/11, this guy gave a short course at the Directed Energy Professional Society on energy weapons.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Don in Missouri. Hello, Don.
Hello, Raleigh.
What's
up? Refresh my memory. I don't recall seeing any debris fall when the planes actually hit the towers.
I don't either. Do you, Judy?
Nope. And I know when you have a NASCAR crash, you get parts cartwheeling all over the place.
Oh, sure. And we've had enough crashes in this country, into buildings, midair over the Grand Canyon, midair over New York, that we know what crash sites are like, period. And that's one that has always blown me away, so I agree, Don.
Yeah, you ought to see a truck wreck.
Yes,
and
exactly.
The photographer who took a picture of the the quote plane entering the South Tower. Never saw a plane.
Yeah.
There isn't one in this picture either.
Yeah. Yeah.
A bit of a holograph, possibly.
Right, right. And a couple of 7-ton jet engines, titanium, just turned to dust, not under normal circumstances.
And yeah, there's a lot of strange things about it.
You betcha. All right, Don, thank you. Well, there are. Now, of course, this is completely out of the scope of your research, but there is some wonder. We know for sure those planes took off from the various airports in question, yet you have to wonder, were they even involved in the places where they were said to be?
Well, I have, you know, looked at what I deal with is what evidence I can see
right.
and find
right.
and determine. I don't know what happened to those airplanes, but what I do know is a normal Boeing 767 did not crash into a normal wall and do what we saw.
Of course not. And we know that. As I say, unfortunately, plane crashes are not an anomaly. We'd like to think they were, but they happen far too often. And we have a pretty good idea of what will happen in such a scenario. And complete dustification is not part of the equation. So, you know, that from the start, I had a lot of trouble believing any of that. But something Ralph had said earlier that we hadn't gotten to yet, and you do address this in the book in terms of this is the substance that keeps on giving from the standpoint of, yes, the dustification and, yes, the rustification of the cars, if you will. But whatever is happening scientifically with the substances, it seems to keep on happening. It's not over right after the incident.
What I find interesting is that, you know, of course, an easy cover for it is having a memorial in the exact footprint where the buildings were.
Right.
And, of course, Bankers Trust is a real problem. It had that gash down the front of it. It was right across the street from Tower 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year or so, they replaced the beams and columns in that region. So they repaired the building, and then they started dismantling the building. Yeah, they repaired the building in order to dismantle it.
And that makes no sense. But the idea that whatever is in this, if you want to call it weaponry, as some would, is an effect that continues after the fact is fascinating to think. Clearly, we know that people are becoming very sick, and yes, you could say it's the asbestos or what have you, but there's a number of things that are going on to believe that certain chemical reactions are still occurring.
Do you realize the size of these particles?
Go for it. Tell me about it.
They're down around the scale of DNA.
Okay.
Much, much smaller than red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, people inhaling this dust, you know, down
right.
the, you know, atomic level, they're inhaling this stuff right into their bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
It goes right into their system. It, for all I know, it crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Right.
But it's just so small, it just gets absorbed right into the body. And if you get, a building and take it apart into, you know, molecules, and you have somebody inhaling those molecules, they're bound to be sick.
Right. Right. And maybe not right away.
Even with those dust masks, it goes right through those.
Oh, well, sure. If you're talking about DNA-level particles, the dust mask you buy at Home Depot is not going to get it. So that's pretty obvious on the surface of it. But the idea of a process that continues to degrade or continues in whatever manner it is, that's truly a frightening situation to think that...
Yeah, and Bankers Trust, you know, they're still taking it apart.
Why is that?
I think they're down to one story left, but a year ago, they just finished taking down Fiderman Hall, which was on the other side of the complex, on the north side of Building 7. It
mm-hmm.
had the same sort of thing. There was just, you know, excuse after excuse, diversion after diversion, Also, you could write probably a volume of books on all the weird sagas around this scenario.
Right. And that's Weird Sagas. We'll specialize in it. That's where we'll pick it up. We'll talk about field effects. We'll talk about a variety of things that shouldn't have happened under anything we know and are pretty predictable under the things that maybe are more esoteric. If you've got questions, we got the time. We're live on the 21st of February, 610-640-6400. Where did the towers go? Judy's book may be hijacked by Homeland Security, but you can order your own copy. It will arrive, mine did, and it's very much worth the read. And it's a great book. Like I say, it's great paper, nice glossy stuff, and beautiful pictures and graphs. And I guarantee you, you will get something out of this book that you hadn't thought about before with regard to what happened on 9/11. So that's where we'll pick it up. The links are at Raleigh.net. Otherwise, you can go to drjudywood.com or where did the towersgo.com, and we will stay right here and hopefully answer your final questions.
It's the Raleigh James Show. James Show. And for this, you're staying up late.
And I appreciate that. And it's worth it because we're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, who has been kind enough to take 3 hours out of her night to answer your questions, should you have any. 610-640-6400, final segment here. Where did the towers go? Must read stuff. Evidence of directed free energy technology on 9/11. And we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about force fields and such, which is certainly a big part of the story. And hopefully have time to talk about the concept of free energy and what this would actually mean to society, which is truly mind-blowing on every level. And that's why when Judy said increasingly she's thinking that country boundaries are a joke and it's a one-world government, I tend to agree with that entirely. So we'll pick it up right there. And if you do have questions, 610-640-6400 or 888-876-5593, drjudywood.com. Or, of course, wheredidthetowersgo.com, and I've got links to all of that on Raleigh.net, so we'll pick it up right there. Let's talk about a wonderful thought for a moment, firing the phone company. You know, as technology has rolled out over the years, people will say, well, what's the most life-changing thing? And for me, it's the idea of virtually no phone bills. That, more than anything, back in the day when I'd pay $1,000 a month to talk to God only knows who, now for the idea of, you know, $23.97 a month to talk unlimited to the USA and Canada, it gets interesting. But, of course, you've heard about VoIP telephone service. If you've got a broadband connection, your own provider has been telling you to get their voice service, and there's no shortage of commercials on television. Everybody says they'll save you money, and, you know, for the most part, they will, all of them. They're telling you the truth. They're going to save you money. And they say it's great quality, and it's at least acceptable in all cases. What they don't tell you is you're going to get customer service, because after all, in the history of telephony, there's never been customer service. Well, there is with VYL Media. VYLmedia.com is the real deal. It's got yesterday's customer service, the kind of stuff that really went out in the 60s, and tomorrow's technology. It's just terrific stuff. We use it on the air, and that's because we wanted to improve the quality over what the landline company could give us, and boy, they did. The quality is absolutely there. You can believe every word I'm saying, though, because there's no contract, there's no commitment, there's no introductory pricing or short-term deals. It's just honest, no game claims, $23.97 a month for unlimited calls to the USA and Canada. Your entire sign-up is going to be $1 if you mention Raleigh James. And you can go to vylmedia.com anytime, vylmedia.com. But I like you to prove me right on how great this customer service is. You can give them a call Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time. Someone will answer, and they'll sound like they're in America, because they are. They're in Oklahoma City. And that's 888-369-8647, 888-369-VOIP. You'll find out who they are and how to get a hold of them. You'll get a real contact, not an anonymous call center. If you've got a technical question, technical support is 24-7. So if it's 3 in the morning on Sunday, it doesn't matter. They answer right away and sound like Americans because, again, they're in Oklahoma City. So if you want the kind of customer service no one is giving you, if you want a real honest deal, $23.97 a month for every feature you can imagine. Oh, of course, your voicemail and your caller ID, and get some virtual numbers that are local to your friends and family throughout the country or Canada that they'll dial locally. You'll answer where you are. Nobody will pay anything. Oh, music on hold, three-way calling, and I'm not going to go on because it's every feature, you know, you can literally imagine. So VYLmedia.com. You can fire the phone company. Doesn't that feel wonderful? And keep your phone and phone number. Did I mention that? Yeah. Same phone number. Nothing changes except you get real service and you get unreal pricing. VYLmedia.com, 888-369-8647, and you tell them that Raleigh sent you. All right, final segment with Dr. Judy Wood. If you've got questions, 610-640-6400. And looking at it from the standpoint of what happened and the idea of the energy that is out there, is this evidence that Tesla's methods were not lost and free energy is possible?
Correct. It's undeniable evidence. As I say, the moment of truth is upon us.
So the idea that everybody is been saddled with these coal burning technologies that are paying hundreds of dollars a month for power, there's no need for any of that.
Right. Except if you use free energy, then who profits?
Well, of course. Now, of course, traditionally when people talk about free energy, they say, yeah, that's nice, but that pesky cold fusion, you can't store it. But I think what this demonstration, if you will, on 9/11 proved is cold fusion is not an issue.
Well, this actually is related to cold fusion.
Mm-hmm.
The same type of phenomenon, you know, cold fusion being not hot temperature. Actually, it's a misnomer. Cold fusion, it is not like hot fusion.
Right.
And it was, the derogatory nickname of cold fusion was coined to make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason, you know, people claim I talk about space beams. That's another derogatory term, and they're actually coined by the same person. But the idea of low temperature nuclear reactions,
mm-hmm,
is what it is, is all the stuff in common. And the same type of things that what's been demonstrated in a jar,
mm-hmm,
you know, the low energy nuclear reactions. It seems, you know, kind of hard, but the way I've seen John Hutchison demonstrate these things,
mm-hmm,
and especially when you start thinking about tornadoes.
Right.
Tornadoes, you know, my childhood memory of this big tornado that went through Topeka, Kansas, wiped out a good portion of the city. Folks didn't sit down with a calculator and say, now let's see if a tornado could have done that, if there was enough energy.
Mm-hmm.
No, it did it. You know it did it. The energy came from somewhere. How does a tornado just pop up out of nowhere and have tremendous destruction? And this building 4 at the World Trade Center, the main body, essentially disappeared, went away, turned to dust, and just left the north wing, and it looked sliced off as if sliced off with an X-Acto knife. That reminded me of what I saw in Topeka, Kansas, with this apartment building sliced. And you could look at it and see somebody's bed that was still made,
mm-hmm,
magazines on the bed, books on the dresser, clothes in the closet.
Right.
But the room was sliced in two.
Exactly. And we've all seen that in a tornado path. And that's the most startling thing, how something will not, a hair on a head or a leaf on a tree will not be disturbed, and yet next to it is total destruction.
And you have straw in trees. You have, you know, levitation, cars sitting on top of telephone poles.
Right.
And in the book, I had this picture of a car sitting on a fence, a wooden fence, where it's under a roof. So it couldn't have tumbled there because the fence would have knocked over and it would have hit the roof. And mm-hmm. the car isn't scratched. It just was floating and then set down to rest on the fence. That's from, I think, Hurricane Wilma.
Mm-hmm.
That was from. But, you know, hurricanes are like a big Tesla coil. They create a static field. And how this technology works is interfering radio frequency signals within the static field.
Right, and that's what creates the things that we've seen. And you've got some great pictures in your book, the plywood through the palm tree, or the straw through the tree. And the prevailing logic is, oh, well, the wind was so fast and it was able to penetrate it, and it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, a palm tree bends over when it went to protect itself from the wind.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get this 2x4 right through the palm tree?
Well, that's where you get into the field effect, a number of weird things, and the levitation. And there's so many things when you look at weather, for instance, like the St. Elmo's fire that you talk about in the mm-hmm. in the book and such, things that really point to the concept of free energy and how it could exist and why. The question that a lot of people have who have looked at this is they think of it much like the weather, which is largely unpredictable and you can't necessarily reproduce it all the time on time. With regard to where are we in free energy, are we now at a point where it is reliable?
Well, look at 9/11.
Well, right, and that's certainly reliable from the standpoint of we're making a demonstration and we're doing this. Of course, we have no idea if they tried it on 9/10 and 9/4 and all of that. But in terms of Hutchison's work and others, are they at a point where it's consistent and reliable?
That's another myth that gets generated out there, and you can imagine the motivation for generating the myth about Hutchison's work.
Right.
Hutchison can reproduce it with 20 minutes warm-up time. And he's done demonstrations for the Discovery Channel, for the History Channel, and other programs. He can't always tell you, you know, he just has fun, you know, playing with the signals and doesn't do it like a controlled scientist. No. So he can't tell you where that thing's going to fly, where that thing's going to disintegrate, and so forth. But stuff happens.
Right. Every time.
Yep. Every time.
So clearly we're in a position where we're on the precipice of free energy, both for good and bad, when you look at 9/11 or the idea of you can throw out your energy bills. It really answers all the global warming fanatics, because clearly free energy is ultimately clean energy, if you will. This would be way out in conjecture, but how far off do you think we are from the cat getting out of the bag?
It depends on how well, you know, smear campaigns are pretty effective. That if somebody reads this book, looks at the pictures, thinks for themselves, I don't tell people what their opinion is. I give them the tools that they can connect the dots how they want to connect them. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks get upset about that and say, well, she doesn't tell us the answer. I want you to understand it. I don't want to be the guru who, you know, you come to feed you. I want you to be able to catch fish and feed yourself. But
right.
here it is assembled. Just look at it, digest it, and it becomes a non-question. It's, you know, as they say, the moment of truth is here. If you want the truth, it's there. If you want to cover it up, you know, we could, you know, there's those two choices.
I think it's undeniably being used, weaponized. I think there's no doubt. We as much, like we were talking before about ARA, we as much know it from the contracts that are out there and the events. In terms of being used as an energy source, a consistent, reliable energy source, is this being used, to your knowledge, anywhere in the world that way? Not necessarily for full public consumption, but even privately?
Yes. And it puts people in harm's way if you talk about it, but I'm sure the military is also using it. You look at ARA's website, and when I was trolling through there to determine what they have and what they're capable of, they have infinite sources of energy in that tent, in that picture, you know. It's one of their capabilities is to provide the military, you know, at something on the battlefield, they have infinite energy. They don't tote in batteries. They have all the energy they need.
That's interesting, isn't it? And, you know, I never thought about that until you brought that up. But you're right. The military has pretty much everything they need. And it's interesting when you read about various things like we're sharing technology with certain countries or we're giving away this or that, and individuals will get crazy and say this is affecting our defense. I think the reality is we have so much more than anybody knows that the stuff that's out there probably at this point means nothing.
Right. They can justify anything at any time.
Right.
It isn't just the U.S., it's other countries, too. So it could be any number of people.
Well, and now we know the one thing we know from 9/11 is we can do it in front of everybody's eyes and no one will believe it.
Right, right. It was an in-your-face demonstration.
Right.
And you look at the cover of my book. As I said when I, you know, did my whistleblowing act to NIST, I said, you know, my intellectual integrity prevents me from calling this a collapse.
Right. Right. And there I agree with that. There's nothing, even to an untrained observer, there's nothing that leads this to be a collapse start to finish. We know just from a basic look at this that this is not a collapse and can't be a collapse. So here you've got the information. It's out there. The book is out there, even though you don't have a copy. And, you know, I've been thinking about that since you mentioned it. I have to believe that Homeland Security is reading it. And I wonder when it's going to arrive.
We're working on it. I think it'll be soon. But I wonder if they thought that was the only place it was coming in. And I'm pretty pleased with myself for getting it sent to a number of people around the country.
Right. And I'll be very interested as this goes on to see all who will read it, but more to the point, with the lawsuit being dismissed, which even though it's commonplace these days, that's quite the blow. Other than getting the information out there, where do you go from here?
The people have to want it, and the fact that this happened and there were folks who celebrated the demise of my case, there's something wrong with that.
Yes.
They're celebrating the demise of a democracy, of a legal system.
Of a republic, which, you know, is no small thing. Based on a rule of law, when the law goes out the window, there is no rule.
That they, you know, acknowledged that they were ignoring this law. They acknowledged the law applied to my case, but, quote, for the ease of writing this decision to dismiss it, they're ignoring this law. And I think that was a statement of respect to me. They didn't have to put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
They could have had some, like, gray mumbo-jumbo thing, like, well, we didn't think in our opinion that it rose to the level of blah, blah, blah. But by putting it in there, they were sort of clearing themselves of, you know, any kind of gray area.
Mm-hmm.
They were stating this law, this case had merit, but they weren't touching it. And the best conclusion I can make on that is we know this involves classified technology, somebody's, whether it's the U.S.'s or somebody else's, and how do you put that in a civil case? Well, behind closed doors, we can't do that without acknowledging it's classified technology.
Yeah. Yeah, from that standpoint, logistically, that's exactly where you are. And I fully agree that the military is using technology like this, ours and possibly others, on a somewhat regular basis. What scenes civilian scenes we've witnessed are by comparison probably very few, but I'm sure you are ever on the lookout for more displays of this.
Yeah, there's certain things that you just can't forget, like, you know, the weird cars where the outside of the side of the car is burning or appears to be burning. It's this weird explain. Or you see these orange glowing things sitting on paper that's not burning.
Right. Right.
And if you see that in another context, you start wondering.
Yeah. It's, there's a lot of questions in terms of from whence this technology came. Less questions, really, in terms of where it's going. More of a question of when it's getting there. And you also
wonder. The more people that know about it and can identify it, the better chance we have that it'll be used for good.
Right, right. And that's the other thing. While you're talking about having more people at large in the public aware and involved, I also wonder how classified this is. In other words, in the secret world, in the black world, if you will, how widespread is this at this point? The idea that it's just a handful of people, I don't buy that anymore. I think that this is a well-kept but widespread secret. What do you think?
Very much. And if you know, another reason why I refer to John Hutchison a lot is because I can go to his lab and witness it. He is not under government contract. He is not under gag order. He gets marginalized, mm-hmm. That's why he's still around. But everybody else who knows about this technology is under a gag order. They're under a secrecy agreement.
Right. And I think it's a lot of people, and I don't think it's only our country. And I think that might be the best or most encouraging news of all, because as the number of people who are aware and involved grows, the likelihood that this will bust open becomes greater.
Yes, yes.
And that
but the truth is here. You just look at the pages of the book and then decide what you're going to do with it.
I agree. Closing it out tonight will be Jan in Tennessee. Jan Williams. Hello, Jan.
Hi, Raleigh, and hi, Dr. Judy.
Hi, Jan.
Was thinking, listening to all of this, that is this the same free energy that David Adair is talking about?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. David Adair was a young man who built a rocket as a kid and wound up with a purview of Area 51 and a number of other top secret projects. And he put two and two together and has as much credibility as you do, Judy.
Yep. That's what you get for it.
Yeah, exactly. No, yes, absolutely. It's the same technology, Jan. You betcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. All right. Good to hear from you. That's an interesting comment, too, because I think just like John Hutchison or David Adair or so many other people who are being marginalized, increasingly this will at some point have to hit critical mass, and it cannot be a secret forever.
It's amazing how many folks, you Google my name on the internet with, idiot, shill, disinfo agent, all sorts of names, but the name calling does not address the evidence.
Well, you see, that to me is the key point there, because when all you can do, and, we see that in the political spectrum, too. People, for instance, who are bring up very cogent arguments against something the government is doing, say, healthcare, for instance. The other side will not address the points, but will go directly to demeaning the speaker, to the name calling. So you see that on every level, and in each case, to me, that's an indication that there's a certain amount of truth and cogency to what someone's saying.
Mm-hmm. If I were an idiot, not worth listening to, why am I so targeted? And, I'm essentially banned from the truth movement. Nobody's allowed to say my name because they don't want anybody to be aware of it to go Google my name and look up my website.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that the folks who are in the quote-unquote truth movement pretty much 100% are going straight on conjecture. And emotion. And not to say they're definitely wrong, but just to say that I've never seen anything in their arguments which is scientific or backed up by fact. It's all assertions. On the other hand, your information is 100% fact-based. You're not drawing the conclusion, and like you say, you want the reader to draw their own conclusion, but I think also, scientifically, you're not about drawing the conclusion. You're about looking at the evidence.
What the evidence says.
Right, and that will draw its own conclusion. I think in many ways it's a compliment to you that they'll vilify you, but I'm hoping that the book, which is so tangible and so easy, will get to the kind of hands who maybe haven't been online, haven't navigated the site, and this will bust wide open. Judy, you've ended the night, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you so much for caring about what's real.
Oh, and I do. We'll talk to you soon. All right, Dr. Judy Wood, wheredidthetowersgo.com. All the information's at raleigh.net, and that's a wrap.
It's the Raleigh James Show.